Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You are listening to Cats with the Dish. I'm John Katzlamitas. I write for all the titles in Green Sun Media Group, the Cats Report, Las Vegas Sun, LasVegasSun.com, Las Vegas Weekly, and I write for Vegas Magazine, Las Vegas Magazine, and the in-house company newsletter when they ask me to. Joining me this week and today is Billy Johnson. He's the president of the Las Vegas Wranglers, and he's also a novelist. He's written the book, If I Die, Tell Steve Martin, I Found His Journal. Welcome, Billy.
Thank you, resume man. That is a phenomenal list of credentials.
Resume man. I have to explain, my dear friend, Trish McCrone, who is my co-host, is in Montana. She's going to be returning next week. So I'm flying not quite blind, but definitely solo. So, Dishy, can't wait to get you back next week. And that brings us to an extended interview with Billy. We're going to spend a little bit more time than we normally do. Unless you screw up, and then we'll have to...
Which is completely likely.
Cut it short. So, president of the Las Vegas Wranglers for the past 10 years is Billy.
10 years. Correct. Yep, going on 11 here.
11th season coming up.
Crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy.
Yeah.
And we'll be getting to... We'll talk about the team and your vision for marketing and all that, which is never boring. But a few years ago, you were talking to me... you were talking to me about other things, but you were talking to me specifically about this book you were working on, and I'm holding it now. If I Die, Tell Steve Martin, I Found His Journal. Tell me, or remind me, and tell our listeners, how you came up with the idea for this book, where you were and what happened to you.
Well, the story sadly begins in Ireland. I was in Ireland. I was on vacation, and I had...
Country dropper.
Yeah, I know. I'm a country dropper.
I think you told me that when I was visiting my family in Idaho. Continue.
They all begin with eyes. You're in the club. anyway...
in Lava Hot Springs, a resort community. Continue. Go ahead.
So now I feel sorry for you. I don't even want to tell you my exciting story. I mean, but...
No, continue.
Okay, so we began...
I don't get out much.
It started out... No, I had this odd dream that I was walking someplace and saw Steve Martin hand in hand with my mother. And as anyone who has vivid, creative...
Sure, this is a dream.
well, I wish it were true.
Your mother, coincidentally, is Bernadette Peters, but continue.
She is. Which has caused a lot of expense in therapy.
Not the Bernadette Peters, the other Bernadette
the
Peters.
The other Bernadette Peters. So anyway, I had this dream, and it just sort of lingered all day and turned into, like, what if that were true, you know? And then I started writing it down, and the novel makes really little mention of it at all. But one imagination turned into another and turned into this this book.
So you have the dream. Mm-hmm. And how far removed from the dream did you actually start constructing the book?
Well, not too long after I got by. I mean, I think anyone who has dreams that sort of make you wonder what you had for dinner the night before, mm-hmm. you know, the human mind's incredible. I mean, what happens when you're not
that's
trying?
That's what I hear.
That's what you hear. I'm planning on investing in one myself. But I mean, some of the dreams you have, you're just like, holy moly, if I try to sit down and write this stuff, like, mm-hmm. this is better than any television program or movie that I've seen
this
in the last
is true.
Year, right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
sometimes you have these dreams, and so I had this particular dream and thought I'd act on it, and I'd been kind of messing around with trying to write 3 or 4 books in the past 15 years, and
right.
thought, you know, Steve Martin is I'm a fan. And
I know this, absolutely.
And a giant mm-hmm. fan. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. kind of know if I had to write dialogue for anyone else that could be, you know, plausible that they would say these things, this was the guy. So this was the dream that that kind of turned into something else. And I kind of acted on it and went on. And, you know, 60,000 words and 5 years later, there's a book.
Wow. What were some of the other concepts you were kind of toying with before you landed on this one? Three or four book ideas?
Yeah, one of them was called My Friend Tom Hanks. And it was meant to be the antithesis to Forrest Gump, the opposite of Forrest Gump. It was mm-hmm. about this guy whose name is Hank Thomas, who is convinced that he's best friends with Tom Hanks, and they went to grade school together. And it was the idea was that it would be told in three parts each chapter, one in the narrative and one in the first person, and they would counteract the story. And by the end of the book, book, you wouldn't know if you really knew Tom Hanks or not.
Uh-huh.
And I realized to make that credible, I needed a whole research staff to learn as much about Tom Hanks as possible. So that died in committee after about six chapters.
But, when the word staff came into play, and yeah, followed by research.
And expense, yeah. But, that was one of them. The second,
it's a great idea.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I'd love to maybe try to get back to that and just confuse the hell out of all audiences. But the other one was one that I'm going to pick up now that this one's done, called Poems About People I Hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to repurpose that and just make I like the idea of the hero being the least worst person in the book.
These will be all poems by you, or are you going to collect poems?
No, it started out to be poems. When I first started writing it, I actually started writing poems about people I didn't like. And then I realized
how'd they turn out?
They were awesome.
How did I come out of it?
But not for a PG audience, so unfortunately. And you can only be angry for so many words, and then you have to lighten it up. But,
yeah, a lot of that resentment won't last the entire process of being published.
No, it won't. There has to be some comedy in there somewhere, I think. So so I'm repurposing that title now and creating a story kind of based on some of the characters I've met and dealt with in Vegas in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's very interesting, given your affiliation with the hockey team and all the time you spent here. That also is very interesting. So when you start writing about you start creating this novel, fully realized novel now, what is your first step? Did you go through an outline process? Did you write a sample chapter? Where do you take what is sort of a thread of an idea and actually begin?
Well, I started with the scene of my mom, or the character's mom, mm-hmm, dating Steve Martin, and then realized quickly we needed some conflict to resolve. And so the guy's name is Navin R. Johnson. And,
right,
and once I figured out that this guy has unluckily been named after the character in The Jerk, and somewhere deep in his soul is a Steve Martin thing, then the conflict became easy. And then once you have the conflict, Picasso said, painting is, correcting every paint stroke that is a mistake. Everything's a mistake, and you have to work your way out of it.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically what this became. And then I got about halfway through it. I wrote the final chapter and then had to find my way to get there.
Right. Is being a Steve Martin fan, was it easy to address some of the nuances of him in the book? I would think that you're drawing off your own collected information about him, what you've absorbed about his career over the years. So that I would expect that made it a little bit more easy. It made it easier for you to talk about him in this context.
Yeah, it made it easier because I wanted to do right by him, because I'm a fan. Yeah, you know, and I wanted whatever he had to say in these particular situations that are figments of the imagination of the lead character. I wanted them to be something that he himself would be able to go, yeah, that's something I would have said in the 70s in that situation. This is something I would have written in the 80s. This would have been part of a book I might have written in 2014 or whatever.
Right.
So I wanted to be true to him. So because of that, it made it a lot easier for it to be plausible.
Right. Set in real time? Set in the current? Or
set in the current.
And as the title indicates, this person, Navin, does find Steve Martin's journal.
He finds...
What are the circumstances?
He finds a journal. He's tricked into a speaking engagement in New York, and he's just fresh out of three terrible relationships with women, and he's on the edge. He's a genius, marketing genius, and he finds his journal, which sort of sets his imagination off, speaking of dreams, into Steve Martin showing up in progressing decades, fighting all his battles through some delusions and daydreams and nightmares and everything else while he's tackling a midlife crisis that he doesn't know he's in the middle of.
Any of this self-based?
Well,
this character,
people,
or based on somebody you know?
I think probably every character in there, and maybe a little bit of the Steve Martin character is based on on the writer. And but that's sort of the thing, though. Like I gave an employee a copy to sort of dummy check before, one last reading, and she came back in the next day and said, "Wow, I just felt like I spent the whole weekend with you." And I said, "Well, everybody's making that mistake. I mean, you should look around at the other people that work with you, because they're probably in there too, right?" So some of it is, and some of it's not, but you embellish everything for fiction. I think that's
right.
What I learned, and we just went from there.
And how did the publishing process work for you? I know you were looking around at ways to distribute the book, self-published.
I self-published it. Yeah. I talked to a lot of writers who have published and realized that, it's tough being a writer. You can't really make a living at it if you don't have, if you don't have the major, you learn that to crack the New York Times top 10 list, that that's actually a bot position. You know, so the odds are really stacked against any writer. So I formed a company for my own publishing company, and I own the rights. And if it goes great, it goes great. And if not, then I'll just do another one and see if that does better.
If you own a publishing company, can you collect material from other writers and consider publishing through your title?
Sure, you can. Yeah. Hmm. So so yeah, it's technically self-published, but the printing and the book business these days is. The port of entry is a lot easier to get through.
And yeah.
The biggest asset I have is I got a full-time gig as the Wrangler's president.
You know? Right.
So I'm not depending on this for my income, which mm-hmm. allows me to put some time and effort into it that other people can't.
Some would term this a vanity project. I mean, you know, at the end of it, it was something that you needed to do to satisfy a need to be fulfilled in this particular context. Is that fair?
It is, and it's probably synonymous with bucket list. I mean, it's something mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do, and I've on and off for 20 years I've been trying to do it, and mm-hmm. I finally found the time to get it done, and so to do it and beat my chest about it and be happy with it, whether there's a typo in it or not, that doesn't matter. it's never finished.
Right.
So I'm happy that it got done, and it's inspired me to do another one.
Have you found anything in the book that you would want to change?
Other than word choices, no. I'm proud of the story. I think it's a great story. It's got a good ending, and I'm proud of what Steve Martin might think about it should he ever get to read it.
We'll talk about him after this break. We have up next our regular movie review contributor, Josh Bell, who's the author of Josh Bell Hates Everything, up next with movies. Stick around. It's John Katsoulimidis with Billy Johnson. I know we will.
Why can I see you and no one else can?
I was going to ask you the same question.
I don't even know who I'm talking to. You're a killer. A cold-blooded killer.
As opposed to a peace-loving killer.
I know what I saw.
You think you know.
That's Lily Collins and Jamie Campbell Bower in The Mortal Instruments' City of Bones, based on the best-selling fantasy book series. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. A mishmash of familiar genre elements, The Mortal Instruments stars Collins as a teenager who discovers that she's part of a hidden magical world. It's all presented in a jumble of mediocre action, cheesy emotion, and underwhelming special effects, with a plot that goes on for too long and ends without resolving anything. I give The Mortal Instruments City of Bones 2 stars out of 5. Also opening this week are two smaller releases worth checking out. In a World stars writer-director Lake Bell as a vocal coach and aspiring voiceover artist working perpetually in the shadow of her voiceover legend father.
And the truth of the matter is, it probably wouldn't help you anyway, because let's face it, the industry does not crave a female sound.
Yeah, Dad, you made me painfully aware of that my whole life.
Not being sexist, that's just the truth.
Okay.
And this whole voice-cracking problem you've grown into isn't doing any favors either.
Bell manages to pull the story's disparate elements together, crafting a satisfying, funny, and sometimes moving story about both family and career expectations. In The Spectacular Now, the central relationship between a teenage screw-up played by Miles Teller and a good girl played by Shailene Woodley is so strong that it makes the sometimes contrived situations surrounding it all the more disappointing. Teller and Woodley are both outstanding, and whenever they're on screen together, the movie is mesmerizing. I give In a World and The Spectacular Now each 3.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katsoulimidis flying solo just for this week as Trish McCrone scours Montana, coming up with scoops from Flathead Lake. I'm sitting with Billy Johnson, the president of the Las Vegas Wranglers and the author of If I Die, Tell Steve Martin I Found His Journal. What about Martin appeals to you? How did you connect with him as an entertainer? There's a lot of people out there you could fold into your life's work as a novelist, and you picked him.
I think probably anyone who grew up in the 70s. A lot of the comics at that time, we really weren't allowed to listen to outside the basement of our friend's house. Richard Pryor was very blue. Carlin mm-hmm. was blue at the time.
So
I was a teenager in the 70s. So Steve Martin was a guy that we got to, pay attention to.
You could play that with your parents.
You could play that with your parents. That's exactly right.
I tell you, that's it.
Yeah, so
I had all those albums too, the ones you checked, and I had to listen to Carlin. Toledo Window Box. for example, in the privacy of my own bedroom. Yeah. That stuff didn't fly around our house, but Steve Martin did, yeah.
Steve Martin did, and then if you followed him, if he hooked you there, then you followed him into where he is today all the way through those years. Mm-hmm. And he's a tremendous writer. He's written a couple of novels.
Yes, he
and
has.
And, mm-hmm. and they're terrific.
Writes for the New Yorker.
At
the back page occasionally, yeah.
That's one thing in mm-hmm. the book that is truly me. I did subscribe to the New Yorker just to make sure I didn't miss a Shouts and Murmurs that Steve Martin wrote.
You know, right.
Because he can be as poignant, as silly, all at the same time as anybody can.
One of the great pieces of his that I always go back to it was the script notes on The Passion of the Christ that he wrote. Love the Christ character. This guy can't catch a break. That's in the margin. Can't we get some hot young actors to play the Jews? I think we can. That was he was going after. There wasn't even like a narrative piece of writing. It was just a script and his own doodlings along the sides.
That's great.
It's brilliant. But I remember the Let's Get Small album. We still quote from it today. You know, that's how powerful he was. But I think beyond that, you are kind of modeled in a unique way as someone who has many different interests. That's what I've learned about you. You're the president of the Wranglers, which is kind of a, you know, you would see that and say, okay, this guy's in sports administration. Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of other things that you're interested in. You're a painter.
Yes.
You do painting.
I do.
You are a masterful marketer and stager of events.
Thank you.
And you play the video games.
I love the PS3, man.
PS3. So that must be, that's kind of an influence, right? On Steve Martin's, at least what he's about, because he's masterful at many different things. He can do magic. He can do rope tricks. He's an accomplished banjo player, musician,
yeah.
writer, actor.
I think the quality that he has that I admire more than anything is that he sees things through. You know, I've always, when I came out of school, I had an art scholarship and went to school, college for journalism and I could have been probably a painter or, you know, something else, graphic artist, whatever. But I've always thought, and a musician, I could play guitar and drums. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that I get really satisfied easily. I kind of go, okay, well, I could probably be an expert at this, but now that I know that I can, I won't. And then I move on to something else, right? But what Steve Martin does, and he does all of these things, and he does them all to the end. Like, he carries them all forward. And I think that's tremendous. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why his duration in American culture has been so long.
Well, he's been able to kind of reinvent himself over the course of time. We went to see him at the Mirage with the Steep Canyon Rangers band. Mm-hmm. It was just a great thrill. But that was, you know, that was him as a musician and doing a music show, and you know, a completely different forum than we're kind of accustomed to seeing him.
Yeah,
it was a great deal of fun with his humor.
And it's a treat these days. And you and I, you know, we probably laughed as much as that show at any show we've been together.
Mm-hmm.
Because his jokes were a different variety from the 70s, but every word mm-hmm. counted.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're crafted. I mean, they're very well crafted. And so we laughed as much as we enjoyed him playing.
Yeah, his whole disposition, the way he introed into the songs, the description of why he had so many banjos on stage was priceless. It's just one big ego trip. was terrifically funny. What would you think of him reading this book? It's there's an outside shot that he could actually pick up the title and leaf through it. What do you think of that idea?
Well, that, you know, it's funny, when I realized I was going to finish this, and I was probably 20,000 words away from finishing it. I realized that at the point I was writing it as me, as the audience, and then when I realized I was going to get it done, then I started to reevaluate it as if he were the only one to ever read it. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tell a story that was reminiscent of the ones in Shop Girl or
yeah.
The Pleasure mm-hmm. of My Company. And mm-hmm. I wanted him, mm-hmm. you know, not necessarily a tribute, because, you know, at some points his personality is used as a foil in some of the story, right? But it did become obvious to me that it was going to work better if it was something that if he picked up, he liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he maybe, you know, that's for him to decide, right? But that certainly was the aim when I realized it was going to get done. So I looked at it in a different eye.
Have you ever met him?
Never have.
Mm.
Never have.
Do you think if you ever have a chance to set up something like that, you're going to carry the book with you to meet him and hand it to him?
Boy, I tell you what, that's
a big fly.
I don't know if I could.
That's a big concern.
I don't think that matches my. I just would hate to be that gratuitous and begging for an audience.
You'll take somebody, and that person will hand him the book.
That's exactly right.
And it'll be me.
That would be perfect.
I know, and I'll hand it to him. So You might be interested in this trope. Or tribe, depending on your tense.
Depending
on your tense. Let's talk a little bit about, as we segue awkwardly, into hockey.
Mm-hmm.
The Las Vegas Wranglers heading into their 11th season in Vegas.
Yep.
How's the team? Let's talk from a business standpoint, first of all, apart from the competitive interest on the ice. How's it doing? How is the business doing at the turnstiles? Are people still finding their way into the Orleans Arena at a rate that is satisfactory to you and the team ownership right now?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, this is a caustic environment for us to do what we do. We don't have a lot of advantages that a lot of teams or other sports have in different markets. So Las Vegas, it's a tough place to do what we do with only 36 dates, and in the nature of the building that we play in, enforces a lot of limitations on us. So you won't see sponsorships that other teams are able to get. Sponsorships mean that you can lower ticket prices, which means you can draw more people.
This has to do with your agreement to play in New Orleans Arena.
Yeah. So there's a lot of nuance to that. And this is my eighth market that I've been with teams. We have one and a half hands tied behind our back.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads into the marketing. We have to overcome that somehow. So if we're only allowed 20 Friday and Saturday dates instead of 24 that many teams get, then I have to convert two of them to midnight to make them worth something.
Yeah.
Or I have to
make them unique.
Make them unique and turn them into weekends. Or I have to have an over 18 game. Or I have to take a chance on Tony Clifton or whatever it is that we're going to do. So it causes us to be a lot more creative and fun.
Other than the scheduling, what are some of the other restrictions that you have to work around in terms of presenting the team and marketing it inside? Is it because it's a hotel casino?
It is. And it's mostly because we have to be in line with whatever relationships that they do or don't want, which precludes us from having a lot of sponsorships and sponsorship revenue that either they agree is not in their best interest and so we can't have it, or is something that conflicts with whoever sells the most beer there or whatever that is, right?
Right.
So most sports teams, you'll see the official beer of a team or whatever. We don't have any of that. So our sponsorship revenues is probably half of what it should be. So that's probably the big one. Revenues create vitality. The rich get richer. And when you have revenues, you do better promotions. You do better advertising. You sell more tickets, and it grows and it grows and it grows.
Fortunately, that hits into your skill set as being an inventive marketer. Anyway, they have to have somebody who's able to work around those challenges.
Luckily, I think that I was the guy for this town, not knowing that we would have those challenges still today. I would think after 10 years that we would, some of that stuff would be relieved, and we wouldn't be under such pressure to create the next best national story. So I think we're lucky that we, and not just me, but the folks that we have in the front office, that they're funny, they're inventive. They want to push the envelope. They want to see how far we can go. And it's not just for publicity, but it's a necessity. We have to do that.
One of my favorite promotions you've done was one of the earliest ones that I really started taking note of was Dick Cheney hunting vest night. Everybody, I think all fans entering the game were given orange vests. Is that right, or was it restricted to any whatever 2000 or whatever?
No, I think we did about 2000 orange hunting vests, and I tell you, they were high quality. The best quality you get for 19 cents a vest. I mean, they were tremendous quality, right?
People are hunting in these even today.
Even today,
but not Dick Cheney. But you ran into some friction with that promotion. I remember that.
Yeah, very proud of my only two death threats that I've ever gotten in my career. From guys, I guess, in the Midwest who would only call at 4 a.m. when they knew I wouldn't be there. And got those calls for up to about a year and a half after. They got very offended by what they thought was a political slant against their candidates, and which really wasn't the case. I mean, it was a pop culture event, and I thought it was fair game to make fun of it and, sell more tickets from it, and we did.
So. Yeah, that was that in 08? Was that during the campaign season? I'm trying to remember now if that was during a campaign cycle. But either way, there are people who were offended by it. What are some of your other favorite promotions? We've had a lot of them at at Wranglers games.
Yeah, I think probably you and I would agree because you've sweated some of these out with me, you know, as you've come to these games. But I think some of my favorites are the ones that have gotten the fewest laughs from the crowd, you know, but they've been accepted in the community and nationwide as being hilarious. We had Rapture Night when Harold Camping, the Christian broadcaster a few years ago, mm-hmm. had predicted the end of the world, and it didn't happen to mm-hmm. everyone's surprise.
So I know, that was a real downer.
It was a downer. I had told everyone I didn't like them.
Started a book about poems about them. I got the shelter going.
Yeah.
Got the shelter.
I made a lot of irreversible errors.
Picked up a couple of addictions I'm struggling with even today.
But the joke in that one that I loved was he had rescheduled it for our opening night. And so we immediately announced that we were going to have the last hockey game on Earth. And the programming of the game was tremendous. We had lots of video clips mm-hmm. and music being played that was topical to the world ending that day. And not just sort of puns, but, you know, some pretty good thinkers, you know. And so I have a guy on staff, and it probably would have done better had Harold Camping not had a stroke a month before before the event. And so we wrote, right? So he had the stroke, and he was wheelchair bound. And so I thought a funny joke would be, all right.
You got to go with it. You got to roll with it, as it were.
I went out and found the world's best Harold Camping impersonator, who was also wheelchair bound. It's a guy named Rick in my office, actually. He sells a lot of season tickets for us. And had him wheeled out, and my beautiful wife, Erica.
Erica is a nurse.
Dressed as a hot nurse. And the joke was that no one got. About a third got it, I think. But the joke was, I've been wrong three times about the end of the world. Screw it. I'm getting a hot nurse. So those who kind of got it, you know, we had their loyalty for the year.
You know, so. The other one that springs to mind was the Wild Wrangler. You brought the Wild Wrangler out onto the ice last season. And hired a couple of Blue Man Group members.
You got a couple of buddies of mine.
Walk us through that deal. That was unbelievably funny if you understood what was going on.
Again,
those are about 16 of us who didn't really understand it inside the arena.
Totally lost on our crowd. Sorry, guys. But about 2 weeks before the...
Is that a midnight game?
That was a midnight game.
Oh, my God.
We had...
Double whammy.
There's a team in our league, the Bakersfield Condors, had a circus night, and Erica, my wife, is an aerialist, and so she mm-hmm. performed, and she brought Joe the Birdman from Vegas, who has lots of animals, including a live condor. Mm-hmm. And the condor was supposed to be majestic on this stick during the national anthem, but escaped. And so it was a real WKRP moment. Uh-huh. You know? Turkeys aren't flying, and neither is the condor.
The Birdman hit the ice and fractured or separated his shoulders, broke his clavicle or something.
Yeah. He broke something, and it was Keystone Cops, and the bird jumped into the condor's bench and scattered their team and went in the locker room and said, I'm out of here. So 2 weeks later, we announced that we were going to have, you know, the rare sighting of a real live Wrangler on the ice during the national anthem. And he behaves similarly in front of a large crowd.
He comes
crowd.
Out and he starts running along the ice. You got a guy with a net chasing him down, or somebody trying to corral him, the handler.
Yeah.
And... If you didn't know what it was, it just looked ridiculous. But if you didn't know what it was, it just got funnier by the moment.
The best part was the abuse that they took from the visiting team, because they were just, get off the ice, we're here to play hockey, eh? You know, they just...
You probably get a lot of that from the visiting teams.
Yeah, probably so. So it was a blast.
It was. That clip's, you can find that still if you do a search for Wranglers, Condors, Cats Report. You can still find a clip to the original Condor episode and the reporting of it and the photos. It's one of my favorite columns I've written in a long time. Gosh, it was funny. So we're gonna kick off, or drop the puck. October, what is that, 19th?
The 19th.
Against the hated Utah Grizzlies. Hated.
Loathed.
They are lucky to get out of here alive every trip. So that'll be happening. The Wranglers, you can catch their information at LasVegasWranglers.com. We're going to wrap it up now, Billy. But the book is titled, If I Die, Tell Steve Martin. I found his journal. How can people obtain a copy if they don't know you like I do?
It's in print. Don't define that. It's in print at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, and ebook on Kindle, Nook, and iBook on Apple.
Okay, and you can also call Billy directly if you have his cell number, and he'll hand deliver you a copy. All right, my brother, thanks for coming in today.
Thank
Terrific
you, John
fun.
Katz.
We're looking forward to everything, you know, the upcoming season, and to check back in on how the book is doing. And if Steve Martin ever reads it, we're going to talk about that too.
That'd be great.
All right, Billy, thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.